Let's start with introductions. I'm Mark Mullen, the program director for the Care Council.
I'm Liz Stumm, Care Council staff.
Allie Cohn, Care Council staff.
Nick Robinson, consumer.
Care Council member.
And Care Council member, sorry.
David Jordan, Council staff.
I'm Lori Thomas, I work at HP.
I'm Helen Lynn, I work at Positive Health Board 86.
Good night. Wade Flores, council member and chair for the Marin Care Council.
If you take a look at the agenda we have before us today.
For the record, Juan Perez Jones as well.
Any opposition to approving the agenda as written? Seeing none, the agenda is approved. Announcements. Any announcements that anyone might have? No? All right. Any public comment? It's a standing item for any members of the public who might be here or any council member who'd like to step outside of their role as council member and speak as a member of the public. All right. Seeing none, we'll go right to co-chair nominations, but a little bit of a background for this particular work group. This is a work group of Ryan White Part A Care Council. It's in many ways a special work group in that members of this work group can include and should include community members and members who are not council members of the Ryan White Part A Council, which means, of course, that we could also have that voting can happen from any person here at the table who's considered a member. Voting does not include staff, which is myself, Liz, Allie, and Dave. However, staff is has traditionally been one of the co-chairs of this work group because staff perform the bulk of the work and pretty much facilitate and lead the process. So that said, there's usually two co-chairs, and nominations are now open for co-chair.
Might we want to talk about scope of work before we nominate someone else to do stuff or oneself?
Sure, I get that. Absolutely.
I would love that.
Why don't we trade those agenda items if that's okay?
Sure.
Okay. So really quickly, I will run through the scope of work. Our sort of initial stage is going to be this planning. The survey instruments, which there's a sort of base survey there, in your materials that we'll go over in a little while, as well as discussing outreach and recruitment strategies. There's a flyer, sort of mock-up flyer. We can discuss changes if necessary, also in your materials. Moving forward from that, generally, the shape that the needs assessment takes is a series of focus groups. In the past, we've tried to keep it under 15, but you know, in the last year, we've had some much bigger numbers and sort of had to capture them at the time because that was sort of going to be our only opportunity. And we sort of pushed it up over 20, and you know, it was actually pretty effective. So I think we're going to be more open to that idea going forward. Because I feel like in the past, our needs assessments have been targeted. Well, in the even further past, they were comprehensive needs assessments for all Ryan White Part A consumers. I think that became a little unwieldy. We also felt that by focusing on specific populations each year, sometimes doing more than one a year, we were able to get a greater sense of what individual communities' needs were and what their barriers to care were, and better able to capture that and then contrast it from year to year with what other populations we're seeing. This is going to be, I think, moving back towards more of a comprehensive needs assessment, just because my sense is that among the population of Ryan White Part A consumers that are our purview, the incidences of mental health challenges are probably incredibly high. And because we are opening us up to self-report and not just clinically diagnosed mental health, I think that we are looking at something that's akin to a comprehensive needs assessment. So, hey Derek, the record show that Derek Mack is joining us as well. In the past we've done 5 to 6 focus groups of, like I said, varying between, you know, 8 to 10 to, you know, upwards of 20. I think this year we're probably going to have to up that to maybe double, if possible. Maybe potentially doing, and generally that is focus groups take place in the venues of our collaborating partners that are working most closely with the populations that we're focusing on. In this case, maybe we need to do more than one focus group per collaborator. I think that sort of recognize that there's not a lot of Ryan White Part A funded mental health services, so we don't have a huge breadth of options, but there's a very large population, so I think we're going to have to think about ways to sort of get our heads around that problem. Super open to ideas around that. Further, starting last year, we hired an intern to do sort of facilitated interview, guided interview, as well as administer the survey in one-on-one. And this is actually interesting because relative to the focus groups, the qualitative data we got had a much greater depth. Unfortunately, we don't have time to do one-on-ones with, you know, all of the people that we would like to speak to. But for the people that we were able to schedule for one-on-ones, I think it was very useful. So we are going to continue with that. I think I've settled on an intern candidate. I'll probably send her an email today and offer her the position. So hopefully next time we talk about this, she will be on board and we can sort of get her rolling as well. So that's generally how it shakes out. I'd like to start doing focus groups as soon as possible because of the large number of people we're trying to get into this research, into the needs assessment. And then I think we'll probably have to cut it off the end of June. Is what I'm looking like. We're scheduled to present at the end of July at the full council meeting, which at that time will be, because we're in the middle of a merge between prevention and care councils, we should be fully merged at that point. So we haven't actually decided on when our full council meetings will be. In the past, they've been at the end of the month. They could potentially be earlier in the month going forward. So given that, I feel like I need to have all the data in and collected by the end of June. So that is where I am, sort of planning-wise, the scope of work. There are lots of questions.
Do you want to go over the focus group structure as well and how
sure.
how we often use
Absolutely.
Facilitators?
Yeah. That's also true. In the focus group, the focus group is broken down into two parts. The first part is a facilitated conversation about quality of life, challenges, boundaries to care, service utilization, things like that. The second part is we do a weighted ranking dot exercise in which we sort of take a few minutes to explain all of the service categories that are funded by Ryan White Part A, and then ask them to rank them by efficacy. So the nuance to that is we don't discuss specific agencies, we only discuss it at the service category level, which is consistent with how care council members review allocation and prioritization. which can be moderately challenging for consumers to process occasionally, especially when there's some service categories that are made up exclusively of one service provider. So it's a thing that we have to navigate a little bit, and that's just sort of a big conflict on our part.
I would also mention that if the categories are, for them, weighted equally, that might be really difficult for them to process which one is more,
Sure.
We've seen that before. A lot of times it's simply, okay, I'm going to put a dot on everything and discard the rest of my dots. Others are, well, I'm experiencing these challenges right now with this service category, so all my dots are going there.
Right.
So this isn't necessarily scientific quantitative data that we're collecting. It certainly is more impressions-based that we share with the council.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it is, I feel like the service category ranking exercise tends towards more of the sort of qualitative end of our presentation than it does the quantitative because of that. So a lot of times it's informed by the conversation that precedes it. So, you know, if you have a really intense conversation about a specific service like dental or something, we often see that ranked accordingly. We do ask or, you know, do offer to have whoever is collaborating with us to help facilitate that focus group. Whether that takes the form of just sort of an introduction and, you know, a sort of whatever on the back end of that, or if that actually takes the place of, you know, is them facilitating the initial qualitative conversation, if they're confident doing that, or co-facilitating it, we also are very welcome to input from whoever is the sort of representative of the collaborating agency. Anything else about that?
No, I think it's good. Any questions about this particular scope of work, the timeline, or what these focus groups, which are the bulk of this assessment, what that looks like? They're pretty straightforward.
It is pretty straightforward.
I wasn't super clear on the way the answers are provided. You said that it's a dotted system where you assign.
Oh, so what we do is no problem. What we do is we have a butcher block paper. Really, where we write down each of our Ryan White Part A funded service categories. So things like mental health, food, this. We go over and describe each one. Each participant is given a bunch of colored and numbered dots because we're collecting, in some ways, two sets of data. So we give them those dots and we tell them, based on your perception of this service category's efficacy, and or your community's need for this service category, place your dots with the more dots equaling higher efficacy or higher need for this service category. It's really self-defining for the client. It just sort of equals what they feel individually or for their community where the importance lies. And so they take those dots and they could spread them all out, or they could do 20 on one, one-on-one. But because of that ability to particularly weight certain things, that's why they're numbered. So we track both the number of dots and how many of the individual participants actually put dots on something. So sometimes those scales look quite different. If someone puts all of their dots, say, on dental, we don't want to give information to the council that looks like the whole group felt like dental was the most, just simply because it has the most dots. When actually, if you look at the spread, it just actually has the same number of participants applying dots. Does that make sense? As in some ways, as non-scientific as this is, we do try to in some ways give as much unbiased information as possible to the council to help them make their decisions.
So, question one: you said efficacy and needs thing is equated.
We talk about both. So the discussion beforehand is talking about what are your needs, but also how effective are these services for you. And so, in some ways, the consumer self-defines as long as that equals in some ways what they consider to be important.
Priority.
I see.
So this relates directly to one of the two or three charges that the council has. One of them is applying dollars, resource allocation to service categories, but the other one is actually prioritizing services. Mm-hmm. And people prioritize services according to their own individual decision-making logic model. Some apply prioritization. Some use the prioritization as ways of expressing what they think are the most personally, are the most important to particular communities. Others apply their own logic around, well, these are the most effective as far as whether it's use of dollars, bang for the buck, whatever they decide. Each individual has that ability to prioritize service categories. So this just connects directly with that. So we don't want to, in some ways, box someone in with saying you can only do it this way, because we've found participants will just, well, they will challenge that. Does that make sense?
If I could reword it in my head, and excuse me if I'm repeating all of this, but the image that I have is, like, let's say five consumers in front of you, and there's a blue, well, let's make it three, let's keep it simple, orange, green, and blue, and the service categories is housing, dental, mental health, those three categories. And if, say, orange says, you know what, everything is about my dental today, and put all of their dots on dental, it'll suddenly look like everybody is going
Absolutely.
For dental until you consider the other two colors, and they may do one of each, and suddenly you kind of get like, oh, these are three categories that are of importance to the community. This particular person thought that this, like, you'd be able to see clearly, like, this is just one person who said everything went to that.
Exactly. And it often leads to interesting discussions in the council as well, when you sort of compare and contrast those two ranges.
Right.
Another thing I want to mention, which should be made clear, is this: this is a needs assessment of Ryan White Part A consumer needs. This is not a needs assessment of the mental health service category. So that's a key difference. We're not here to assess how mental health service providers are doing overall, but it's only except as a part of the entire system of care. Rather, we're here to assess what are the needs of people who have self-identified as having mental health issues.
I see. So we're not asking about the mental health service categories to mental health consumers. We're asking about all the categories to mental health consumers.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought it
yeah.
was the other way.
And they may not even be consumers of mental health services.
Right.
Some of them might have resistance to that,
right.
and they don't want to have that, but they've self-identified as having those challenges.
Got it. Okay.
This was a very complex discussion at the council. And throughout multiple committees, because I think a lot of people didn't quite grasp the idea that we're not assessing our mental health providers here. You know, there might be some comments, critical or not, about providers or service categories, but that is not the purpose of this needs assessment. The purpose is to see how these particular consumers feel about the system of care, which includes multiple service categories.
And mental health is one of them, but so is dental.
And food, and this, and that, yeah.
Right.
And how does their mental health status, in some ways, impact their utilization of and engagement with these service categories?
In effect, it's no different than last year's needs assessment, in which we focused on API, or African-Americans, or the year before, which we focused, and maybe more similar to the year before, when we focused on, you know, users of crystal meth.
Right, so the subpopulation we're asking about what they
right.
need for Ryan White Part A funding is different this time, and it's mental health.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
And so with the African-American, that's a great example, African-American needs assessment. We were not assessing the efficacy or the importance of the Black COE. The Black COE was mentioned, for sure,
right.
all throughout, but that wasn't the point of needs assessment.
Right. The previous year, we're not assessing substance use programs specifically, though that was tended to be a large part of it.
God, that's very helpful clarification. Not what I understand.
Yes.
Good. I'm so glad I mentioned
that.
Yeah.
I didn't think you were assessing the providers. I understood you wouldn't be doing that, but I thought you were assessing subcategories within the category of mental health, like saying, do people want psychiatry more than individual therapy? Do people wish there were more groups? Like, I was thinking that was the conversation we were going to be asking folks. But
yeah.
Now
I have every expectation that stuff will definitely come up because of the focus, though.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, for
right.
sure.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's just very important. I think that's where a lot of council members got tripped up as well. But it also, in some ways, makes this one of, like Dave mentioned, one of our most comprehensive surveys that we've done in a long time. The other ones are very targeted around cultural or gender or orientation, etc. But, you know, many, many, many people can self-diagnose themselves as having mental health challenges in life, and so many people can qualify for this survey. So it has certainly the potential for being quite large.
So you did mention something that I found interesting, so which is quite common. Just because you identify with any sort of condition doesn't mean that you access the services in regards to that condition. And, of course, mental health is famous for this. So is there going to be a, for lack of a better term, sorry about this, are we going to be assessing? So you say that you have a mental health issue. What is it? How did you come about this? Like, are we going to
be... So let's save that conversation, actually, for Outreach and Flyer.
Okay.
If you don't mind. I actually wouldn't have to step out of this meeting shortly after the co-chairs are nominated. So please don't nominate me. and I'll hand it over to them. So with that said, any questions more about scope of work, what we're doing here? No? Okay, so nominations are now open again for co-chairs.
I nominate Dave Jordan.
Okay. Is there a second to that? And anyone can second, nominate, or self-nominate. Is there a second to Dave's nomination as co-chair?
I second.
All right. Any other nominations? We can have one. We can have two. We usually have two.
Well, I have a question. I haven't been officially ratified for the council.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think... for all three of you, I think you came in after my announcement. For needs assessment work groups, any member of needs assessment work groups can have membership throughout the community. So you don't actually have to be a council member to be a part of this work group and to make decisions. So therefore, you'll be able to vote, nominate, et cetera, et cetera. The only real difference is that staff will continue to not have a vote. All right, any other nominations for co-chair besides Dave Jordan?
You can nominate yourself, of course.
Oh, well, there you go. Any more nominations for the co-chairs of this work group? All right, seeing none, we'll just do a hand vote. All those in favor of Dave Jordan and Wade Flores as co-chairs of this needs assessment work group, please raise your hand. It is unanimous, and I now turn it over to you guys. All right.
If you guys don't mind, I'm actually going to switch outreach and 7 and 8 because I feel like the survey is maybe the higher priority to get to today. And it might take a little more time. Nobody objects to that? All right. Also, before we get started on that, one more piece of scope of work that I forgot to mention. So in the materials, you'll see a piece of paper that's labeled eligibility criteria. So part of our mandate for this needs assessment was to give special attention to or a special focus on our special populations and severe need as defined from our
just special populations,
not severe need. So just so that we're all aware of that, and there's a definition here, and it is just people that we've identified as having disproportionate barriers to care, specifically around language barriers or gender and race barriers. So, as well as elders. Just so we're all aware of that. So, if you want to kind of have the speakers list?
Sure.
I want to all take a look at the survey here and just quickly go through it. So this is a base survey that that we generally work from putting these together. So what I'll be looking for is questions that are tailored to the specific population around mental health primarily, but anything else that you find maybe lacking. So let's just go ahead and run through it question by question. Started. So first age, I think that's pretty straightforward. Race, is there anything we'd like to see additional added to that question, or wording, or anything like that? Everybody finds it acceptable? Gender, so there's a nuance here. So we have gender and then gender identity as separate questions.
Do we want to clarify the gender as gender at birth as opposed to next to gender identity? Those become like very different.
I don't, because our intention is not to capture gender at birth. Our intention is to sort of, because it doesn't really serve any purposes data wise, and we're not, this is not sort of in a clinical situation in which gender at birth might be pertinent. So I think that the idea is that for many people who might be trans or otherwise, that their gender-wise, they might just identify as male or female. And then if they want an opportunity to further add nuance to that, then we have an opportunity to say, I'm female, but trans female, you know, M to F trans. If that's something, but if they just wanted to identify as female, for our purposes, it's, you know, but we'll accept that as well.
Would you accept a positive answer for both male and female for the intersex? Not that you get a lot of them.
I don't really have a choice. People are going to fill out the survey the way they're going to fill it out. It might. You know, Flummox, our the program we use to analyze the data a little bit, but I think we're just going to have to accept that there's going to be a few anomalous answers to some of these questions, or non-answers.
I guess I would wonder that if you're not asking the question about your gender assigned at birth, then why not just ask your gender identity? I guess I think that it's either you're asking, I understand what you're saying, that I might say if I'm a trans woman, I might say I'm female, and then I might want to say either that I'm female in my gender identity, or I might want to say that I'm trans, M to F. But I don't know. I guess I don't find those. I feel like you're asking the same question twice, unless you say assigned birth.
We are sort of asking the same question twice in some ways, but we're also giving people an opportunity to feel that they don't want to answer the gender identity that they just want. So give us the individual answer. Sort of binary answer, and it's sort of, this is previously on our previous, this is actually something we've changed recently, and on the surveys previously we did generally go with gender identity as a single question. We had a little bit of pushback around that idea, so trying to be more open to fluidity.
I have just got a little bit of confusion for some people.
I agree.
To believe and assume. I'm trying to interpret what it is that they are being asked, how they answer it, and then, you know, what the expectation is on the one hand, and then what it is that you want to answer on the other hand, which is typically what they want to, you're trying to get free on.
And
I think that it's not a support of what they want to answer, it's still creating confusion around the expectation that they might perceive we have.
I agree that that is a challenge. I think that there's always going to be somebody there to explain that. And, you know, sometimes comprehension of these surveys is in many of the questions, is a thing that we deal with. I guess I'm just wondering, balancing sort of being as inclusive as possible to everybody's sort of perspectives on this versus clarity. I'm open to what the group has to say on this. If you guys want to vote to simplify,
We had just talked about this at a meeting last week, and I think that the intent behind the two questions was, if someone wants to identify as both a woman and trans, to offer both opportunities. You know, I'm not just trans, I'm also a woman. So Maybe if we just eliminated the first gender question and allowed for multiple answers.
I could do it.
Say, like, check
all
that apply or something like that. And so it's less confusing, but also more inclusive.
What does the group think about that as an option?
I think that solves the problem of people being confused and allows for the goal you're stating, which is
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No objections to making that change?
No.
Alright, moving on. Sexual orientation. Is there anything we'd like to see added to this?
I think the other category kind of covers it all, but I know that there are still quite a number of African-American gay men who would not identify as gay men, but as same-gender-loving. But I know that that can be filled in the other category.
Do you feel like there's a large enough percentage of people that are going to want that to be... Should add it, or should we just leave it as the other?
Since we're only talking about the city and county of San Francisco,
San Mateo and Marin as well.
That adds the complexity for me around that. Like I would, the potential is that there's going to be, if it was just San Francisco, I would say nah. But since you add the other counties, I think. There's a population of folks that would want to see something below.
What does the group think about that?
I'm not 100% certain about that.
Does anybody feel strongly about not adding it? Is there any objection to adding it?
No, I mean, the only thing for me when I look at data is that you want to be able to compare it to other data. So at least that's often what I want to do. So I want to ask the same questions in one set of people that I'm asking another. So one question I would have is, in previous, have we used HRSA as an example to describe that sexual orientation? Or have we used other things so that we can, because that comes to mind that we don't want to add things that then they don't get incorporated in a similar way. We don't know what it means compared to the last needs assessment or whatever. So that's the only thing that comes to mind for me in general, actually, for all these things, which is why I would think if we used, that doesn't mean you don't change things if they don't make sense or if the kind of community norm has changed, but I still think it's important to try to have some consistency over time to help us talk about apples and apples.
I agree.
So, and I don't know if this is one of them. Changed already, then maybe it's fine to add another one. You know, if we add that except the last time, then harm.
I think we used it for the African American needs assessment specifically because of that, but not consistently on the other needs assessments.
You can also easily simulate such as statistical.
Yeah.
To simplify it. I mean, it adds granularity, but it doesn't. Confusion if we equate statistics in the day as well.
It's true. I think that that's probably on the back end of this, if we sort of lump some of those things together data wise, then we don't sort of lose those numbers or diffuse the numbers in a way that confuses the issue. My feeling is that maybe we just leave it in other though.
And then
other
break
option,
down others.
Just for consistency sake.
Well, maybe it'd be a formula for the next one, because maybe there's a bunch of specific others as an example.
Which
suggestion, and then we know that actually probably should be a choice.
Which I haven't seen.
Yeah.
I'm pretty consistently, other is not generally used in this. So no objections, we're just going to leave it as is. Moving forward. I feel like these next two questions are pretty straightforward. Any conversation around them?
Well, the only question is that being on one of the retention, one of the Getting to Zero committees, that question about are you engaged in medical care, we've been talking a lot about how often people say yes to that, but actually then they'll describe either not a doctor who they say is their doctor, or they may have missed a lot of appointments. So I guess it occurs to me that we might want to say, have you seen your primary care provider in the last 6 months, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It would be interesting to me, obviously, because one of the beliefs is that a big issue about non-virally suppressed folks are mental health and substance use and homeless issues, so that might help us look and see if we're looking specifically at mental health folks who identify as having mental health issues, are they also saying that they haven't seen their doctor? I don't know if it's the right place for it, but that occurs to me as a possible piece of data we'd love to have.
I think that's probably very reasonable. I thought about adding a question around what level of engagement, or even a question around, like, do you have current labs or something
right,
like that.
Right, those
but I felt like maybe I would just wait until we're here at the meeting before I started getting to the nuance of that. So how do people feel about phrasing around that?
I like what you're saying, actually, a lot. It makes a lot of sense to me. But I have an additional question. Like, do we just want to say, have you engaged with a medical provider, or do we want to say, get very specifically and say, have you engaged with your HIV primary provider, or you know what I'm saying, as opposed to, like, I mean, it could have been just...
It could have been your podiatrist,
right.
And that's not really what we're getting at. If we're trying to ask the question about the viral
limitations, so maybe we say primary care provider.
Well, I like saying HIV, though I don't know. I guess if I maybe I'm stable and it's not a HIV specific practice where I get my HIV care, and so maybe primary care.
Okay.
And a time frame?
Yeah, time frame.
I agree totally.
Six months.
I think now is considered standard practice.
So do we want to say within the last 6 months, within the last year, is two separate options? Maybe. Okay.
No, I was thinking that we should also include, have you engaged in mental health care?
I think it is. My intention was to sort of add those questions in later. So what do we think about a 6 month and a year within the last 6 months, within the last year? Or do you think it's just, are we just going to consider within the last 6 months as engaged?
People in San Francisco renew their
eligibility renewal. Yes.
So then it covers a 6 month period, mm-hmm. and then have to renew again, redo an ADAP. So.
But a lot of times, the 6 month renewal is like an attestation of.
It's a mail in. It doesn't necessarily apply that you've seen your doctor.
Exactly. So that the 6 month renewal eligibility renewal does not necessarily equate engagement.
I
think that 6 months is good.
Yeah.
And it goes with a year could be a little too lax. And these are the thing where I work. We do blood draw every 4 months. And 6 months seems like a fair amount of time to be at least a visit. Not knowing exactly what's happened, but at least a year could be a little too loose for me.
If I understand, it is standard care practice now every 6 months, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the recommendation. So it makes sense.
Yeah, it's moved from 4 to 6. Well, it depends on how stable you are, but kind of the general standard, right? It's twice a year.
But if we're talking about the clinical standard of care, but we also want to think about it from the consumer perspective and what they consider to be engaged in care. And if, from a provider perspective, 6 months is sort of standard for engagement in care, but, you may be a consumer of services who's like, oh yeah, I have a doctor, I have a primary care provider that I see. I haven't seen him in the last year, so maybe we put within the last 6 months, within the last year, more than a year. And sort of, and if people are like, well, they check the question, I am engaged in care, but then they check, more than a year, then we know we have sort of there's a conflict in that data, and we can sort of point that out.
That's interesting.
I think most of the time that I've seen or the forms and surveys that I've filled out, there's always at least 6 to 12 months as a
doctor. Okay.
I know with my doctor, if you're not having a crisis right now, he usually says, I'll see you in 3 months. That seems to be the period that he wants to keep the current labs and everything out.
Sure. Yeah. man, yeah, that tends to be lab. But that sometimes is just getting labs and not actually seeing a provider.
So is that the three questions then? Is it engaged in medical care, 6 months, and then a year? Is that the proposal?
So what do we think about doing within 6 months, within a year, more than a year, as a follow-up to our, are you engaged in medical care? Any objections?
I don't know why everyone's thinking, like, if it's more than a year, is that it just opens up the question suddenly, like, is this person engaged in care?
Well, that's the point, I think. So if I say yes, but then I say it's been more than a year, I think we then would interpret that as I would assess that answer to be no. Even if I feel like I love my doc and he knows me and everything, but it may not, but
the difference between perception and reality.
Right.
Because that's a lot of what we're dealing with here is how people are perceiving these things. So, next page, where are they accessing medical care? Am I missing any big ones that we should... Sorry, Allie.
Oh, no. I was just wondering, what do we use this for? Like, this question, to me, I feel like we always gloss over it when we do our needs assessment. Is there a need for this question?
The question about where do you
about
medical
for our purposes, I feel like I've never.
I don't know. I think
you just get like a list.
It does. The reason I would be interested in it when I look at this data at the end, because if we oversampled something, for example, if everybody was at Kaiser, that would be sort of odd, or that would be that would suggest that we need to do another survey. You know, it might. So that's one reason to me that it kind of seems valuable.
Sure.
And we know at least for people using care dollars where they should be seen. So we might also want that to be kind of reflected. So to me, that's what I would look at it for, or what we would provide meaning for. If we never actually do that then maybe it's a question. And the other reason it seemed valuable to me as a person who might be filling it out is it kind of gets back to this question. So if I say I'm engaged in medical care, then I can't say where I go because maybe I am not sure. Like, that's an interesting, another conflict about it. So that's the other reason it's interesting to me, that a person might say, they might then say it's not applicable, even though they just said they were engaged. In those
or maybe we add a don't know to that question. And I think that is the value is in that we may get the data that we totally expect to see on this, and that we have seen, you know, mostly Ward 86, you know, mostly, you know, the places where, you know, mostly Tom Waddell, things like that. But if we get an anomalous, a large anomalous number for some reason, then maybe that points to something specific. Because I think that some of these questions are going to be similar in that it doesn't necessarily, if we get what we're expecting, then we can just sort of move right past it. But if we get something unusual, then maybe we get something interesting out of it. So do we think we should add a don't know to this list?
You know, that's the case where I see the others, again, category covering that sort of thing. That's where I don't know where to go. In my head, at least. But I don't know.
What is the group thing?
Kind of like you said. I don't know. I think it's not explicit.
I think that if there's a question of, you know, if during the, while people are filling out the survey, if they ask a question, we can just instruct them. But I don't know one or another if it comes up.
We're not anticipating that there might be a situation where there's more than one.
People are not technically supposed to be accessing more than one medical care provider, so I guess I did not put that in there but I guess that there are situations where they're transitioning between medical care providers. So I can. One or the other.
It doesn't say check all that apply.
I can easily change this. I can easily change it to a check all without actually saying check all, so that if somebody marks more than one, it'll capture more than one without sort of encouraging people to mark more than one, because that might be confusing.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to write check two if you change in the last 6 months.
I feel like we get a lot of checking emergency care or urgent care along with a standard.
Yeah, okay.
Provider.
So
we can capture both. It's really easy, right?
So what do we? So I can change this to a check all that apply, but should I label it as a check all necessarily? Because I feel like that might be confusing to people.
I vote for no, though it seems a little infantilizing. So I will just say both things are true. I feel like it's kind of treating people like
fine
one. But I don't. But my instincts are to say no because it might make people think, oh, I went to mission at one point, I went to Warden Six at one point, and then it's not clear suddenly, and they think we're asking, where have you ever received?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that could be really good.
So we're looking and asking, where do you receive your primary?
Or your HIV medical care? Is that a way that we want to say it or something?
What did you say? It's up to you guys.
Where do you currently receive your medical care?
Because that does kind of make a difference. So you can receive your HIV medical care at a particular location, but if you have like many people who are aging or more advanced HIV disease, you may be sent to specialists all over the city, depending on the condition. And suddenly you're in a situation where you're like, well, I get it here, and I get it here, and I get it here. But there is a place that you're getting your HIV care. And I think that's what we're trying to look at, right, in all these sort of cases.
Yeah, because I could see someone going to Tom Odell and going to Southeast for dental care.
Right.
They could also be going to Health Right 360 because they're going there for rehab.
Right.
So
and it's going to be different, and it may be different when we get to the mental health questions, because
sure.
That's definitely going
to be. So maybe we change it to primary currently. Where do you currently receive your primary medical care?
Yeah. Is that what we want?
Or do you want it to be where you currently receive your HIV medical care?
Well, this kind of comes back to that question about how does the data get used, right?
Yeah.
Because
right.
That, I don't know. So that will determine what we want
to
ask.
My inclination would be to change it to currently receiving primary medical care. I feel like that covers.
Yeah. And then it shouldn't be an option to check more than one.
Right. But I will still leave it as a check all, sort of, but it'll be kind of hidden in case people, for whatever reason.
Just to clarify, you're talking about like within the SurveyMonkey, not on the actual form, right?
Right. Well, if you look at the ones that say that are check all, the ones that are not, the check all ones are boxes and the check one is a circle. So it's clear from like looking at it which ones are which, but you don't necessarily have to write check all that apply.
But yeah, you have to have the behind the scenes functionality sort of like, you know, yeah.
Yeah.
So I want to get to this though. Like you were saying primary medical care versus the HIV. But the very next question is asking about HIV ARTs.
Uh-huh.
And so I don't know why, but I kind of go, well, if you're going to ask about my HIV care, like, why not just say it? Like, why not just be very specific about, like, we're wondering where you're getting your HIV care. And if you're getting your HIV care in those places, are you taking ARTs?
What about where do you receive your primary health? You really do only have one position. You're going to be either one of these places.
Right. I mean, yeah, I think that that's true, that for most people who are HIV positive, their primary medical provider is their HIV doc. And then, you know, they may see a variety of other specialists or hepatologists, or they may go to a pain clinic or whatever that's also consistent medical care in their life. But I feel like not everyone falls into that category. I don't know. I'm willing to go with what the group thinks on this.
So our options are on the table is changing it to something like, where do you receive your HIV care or your HIV medical care, or where do you receive your primary care? Are those the two kind of things we're considering?
Sure. So I guess we'll say how do we say each one.
So who's in favor of primary medical care?
Yeah.
And who's in favor of HIV medical care?
Okay, so primary medical care, show of hands. And HIV, show of hands.
Okay.
So it looks like we're going with HIV. Alright, moving on. Thoughts on the phrasing of these next two?
I would use HIV vacation instead of vacation compared to everything. Unless we need that later season always.
Right.
Great. Where we want to miss out for
Yeah. Okay.
I might put in parentheses ART or antiretroviral therapies because I think just, I don't know, I guess I think if I also take some kind of blood pressure med because of, it's so general, it could include many things. And maybe that's wrong. Maybe nobody would think that. I don't know.
I agree with that, actually.
Yeah, I think that having a more sort of general HIV meds and then parenthetically it's not the only time that we have something where we have a little more specific, like broad and then specific parenthetical in the survey, so I think that's totally acceptable. What is the first thing? Virally undetectable, we feel like that's a fairly common phrasing, people understand what that means. Comorbidities, anything else that should be here, big ones that are missing?
So, and just for clarification, because this is looking specifically at folks with mental health issues, those series of questions are what we're going to form later. It's no need to put it here.
Yeah, these are physiological and medical comorbidities.
I'm just aware that this is a long survey and that we need to add a whole section around mental health, and I'm wondering if we want to have, do we need this question? What's the purpose of having this question on there? We know that people with HIV have many comorbidities. Is there a specific reason to have this one for this population?
I think it's similar to the other question about whether the same primary medical. If it is what we expected, we see high rates of hepatitis and or osteoporosis in older people or whatever, then it is what we expect. But if we see something really anomalous, then it's something worth looking at. I agree. This question is a little bit challenging as the person who administers this survey the most to people. This is one I tend to have to explain.
What would even be anomalous with this? Like, I feel like we expect to see really high rates of almost any of these. Utility would it have for our?
I think that if there's anything that's out of the ordinary, that it's worth pointing out. It's worth noting.
Would it help to, maybe shape it a little bit in terms of, I guess it would be kind of rude if somebody was diabetic and then suddenly became HIV positive to suddenly kind of go, what are your chronic illnesses since becoming HIV positive? It's kind of not getting there either, which is what I was thinking. Like, maybe we should think just in terms of within this diagnosis.
Well, and I understand it right that we're going to add a bunch of questions later.
Mental.
So maybe this stays on the consider to cut if we get unwieldy.
Yeah.
And I feel like we should consider having a really similar type question specific to mental health later on.
I think going forward, once we like to just sort of power through these, in a sense of what we have.
Too late. We are powering through. I love your hopeful thinking.
Get through them. Before we start working on the sort of specific section of it, so we have an understanding, so we're not duplicating questions, or duplicating sort of spirit questions. So we can leave that on a sort of as a maybe. We have a series of questions here around access to benefits and that kind of stuff here. That has been sort of pertinent to us because of ACA. I think that it's going to be less pertinent as that sort of smoothed itself out a little bit, but there's a lot of funding going towards benefits counseling and navigation.
Was it Medi-Cal on that list?
There's Medi-Cal and Medicare in number 13.
Yeah, it's something that should be number 13.
Also, we use Medi-Med.
Yeah, I think I think the thought was that Covered California was the blanket for that, the umbrella, but I can make it specific and put, like, parenthetically, many, or something.
Like, Medicare recipients aren't part of California, and that's kind of a large, people get really confused about that.
Mm-hmm.
So should I take Covered California out altogether, or should I just
think
change
it's relevant.
And just change it to
relevant.
Medicare, Medi-Cal?
Oh, no, I mean, Covered California, then there are all these other plans. That, I mean, this is a very current issue, right? So a lot of people are on Covered California.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that if you're surveying people in the public health system, they'll look at this and go, mine isn't on here. I'm on Medi-Cal. Or I'm on Medicare.
That would be exactly my response, and I would be writing it in under other.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So I think it's another circle.
Yeah.
Because I think you can be on Covered California and pick
and get your Medi-Cal through Covered California.
Right.
Okay, so add another circle for Medicare. Anything else that you feel like we need to add to that? And the next question? All right. I think it's a question specifically around benefits counseling. Yeah. Not think, I know it's a question specifically around benefits. I wrote it, I know it.
I see these applications,
I
mean,
I wrote it in collaboration, but I'm the one who actually wrote it. Next question, number 15. Hiring income sources. I think, again, this is just a question. It's, you know, we generally know what we're going to see here. It's not super pertinent, but if we see something out of the ordinary, we can cut it or keep it regardless, or, you know, depending on space as we move forward. Same thing with monthly income. I know, you know, we're probably going to see under $1,000 for most of the people, or, you know, around there for most people we interview. So,
quick question, and you probably already have an answer for this. When we talk about working, would it matter to? Would there be any interest in watching it branch off full time, part time, contract?
Sorry, what?
Like, in terms of the what your working status is, and part of the reasons why I'm kind of interested is that I think it's kind of interesting to see how many people are working full time but underpaid for full time work. Or
so, adding on question 15, working part time is a separate level.
Full time, part time.